This WGAN podcast is brought to you by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland for your acute rehabilitation needs. Hope is here.
Susan Collins, fresh off her trip to the Texas-Mexico border. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Steve. Great to join you.
Well, thank you for coming on. And as the listeners are aware, you've just gotten back from a trip that you helped organize with several of your colleagues in the Senate, including Angus King, going down to check out the situation on the border. Now, the media, what we've been given of the border has been sensationalized. We don't really have a good idea of it up here in Maine. So tell us what you saw down on the border.
Well, that's one of the reasons that I wanted to go personally and get a firsthand feel for what is happening. In just the last year, there have been some 58,000 unaccompanied children who have crossed the border. Prior to my visit there yesterday, I was under the impression that most of these children were very young. In fact, most of them are teenage boys between the ages of 14 and 17. That doesn't mean that it isn't still a huge problem. It is. But it changes the complexion of the problem and what our approach needs to be. It suggests to me that many of these boys are coming to this country in search of work to escape the poverty, the gangs, the violence of their home countries, to be sure. But essentially, there has been a huge influx since 2012. And there were some very young children that we saw as well. They were usually accompanied by their mothers. But for the vast majority of the children who are coming in, they are teenage boys.
Now, that's very interesting, because the image that I think the media has tried to portray is that the vast majority are between the ages of 4 and 9, and they've somehow wandered from Central America across the Mexican desert to get here. And obviously, the sympathy that children younger than 10 get is somewhat different from children between the ages of 14 and 17. Now, Senator Collins, I'm assuming that you saw the actual border. Does the border itself, is it secure?
Well, obviously the border is not secure, or we would not have this enormous influx of people into our country. But I will say that the Border Patrol is working extremely hard to try to apprehend as many people as possible. And indeed, the fact that they apprehended 58,000 of these children shows that they're out there. But it's important to realize that what happens in most cases is these children are smuggled up to the border by these smugglers who are called coyotes. And then the children are told to just give themselves up to the Border Patrol agents. They are under the impression, an impression that has several causes, but that the president has been very slow to counter, that if they make it to the border, they're going to be allowed into our country, and they're going to be allowed to stay here. And that's why I think it is so important for us to act very quickly to return these children to their home countries unless they have a credible claim of asylum, and most of them do not.
Now, getting to this impression that has been created in Central American countries that these children are going to be allowed to stay here, there was a law, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, passed in 2012. Some are saying that this law has helped create the impression among Central Americans that if you get to America by a certain time, you're going to be allowed to stay. Is that something that we need to work on in Washington, D.C.?
Absolutely. This law definitely needs careful review, and we do need to amend it. It was intended to protect children who were the victims of traffickers. For example, these horrible cartels who are trafficking in young women for sex, for example. And that's what it was aimed at. But what it does is it treats people differently depending on which country these unaccompanied minors come from. So if a teenager crosses the border from Mexico, for example, that teenager is processed very quickly, brought before an immigration judge, and in the vast majority of cases, sent back home within 48 or 72 hours. However, if children are from Central America, they go through a much longer, more involved process. There are specific rights for them that are laid out in the law, and the process can take 2 years before they even see an immigration judge. And by that time, they've been in our country for 2 years, and it's much harder and less humane to send them back to their home country. So I don't think we should be distinguishing based on whether the teenager comes from Mexico versus Honduras. And that's what that law does.
And now, this law was passed under President Bush, and so it's given a lot of people on the left fodder to say, well, this problem was created or exacerbated by President Bush's law. But this seems to me like a law that was passed with the good intention of helping people who are victims of human trafficking. But now that we have this rush of immigrants on the border, it's having an unintended consequence. What can we do to fix that law and kind of prevent this situation and maybe expedite deportations of some of these individuals?
Well, you're exactly right. The law actually was authored by a Democratic senator, Senator Dianne Feinstein of California. It had widespread bipartisan support. I think it passed unanimously in the Senate, and the president signed it, President Bush signed it into law, because all of us were under the impression that it was going to help protect these young children and teenagers who were the victims of human traffickers. So you're exactly right. And we do want to protect them. And that's why we just need to amend the law to make sure that there is an opportunity, but an expedited opportunity, to separate out those who do qualify for asylum, who are victims of trafficking, but to ensure that the rest are sent back to their home countries unless they can show that they meet the standard in the law to stay in our country.
Now, obviously, coming up on the August recess, lots of members of Congress are kind of itching to get home. In the House, we saw lots of conflict there. An immigration bill was pulled out at the last second. Then there were some more votes. What's going on down in D.C. on the Senate side? What are we going to see? What's likely to come out in terms of legislation dealing with this problem? Or are we going to see no action taken, no law put before President Obama that he can sign?
Well, I have urged Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, who decides whether or not we're called back into session, to call us back into session now that the House has acted. The House has passed a bill that the Senate Democrats don't like. Well, that happens all the time. That doesn't mean that action should stop on the problem. We do need to have more funding to deal with this crisis on the border, because the Border Patrol agents with whom I talked yesterday, and I made sure I talked to rank-and-file agents as well as the commissioner and the more high-level people, told me that they are absolutely overwhelmed. I mean, they are working night and day. And the fact is they are going to run out of money. So we do need to provide some additional funding, as the House bill does.
So are we talking $3.7 billion as the president has proposed?
No way. The president's amount was way, way more than is needed to deal with this problem. The House passed a bill that I think was about a little under $700 million. The Senate bill, even the Senate Democratic leaders say we don't need $3.7 billion to deal with this issue. And when I was talking with the Border Patrol agents, they said that the flow of teenagers into the country has slowed lately since they started sending some of the families who are coming together back to their home country. So just seeing those planes land sends a signal that helps to counter the misinformation that somehow if you get to the border, you're going to be allowed to stay. And the administration needs to send a far stronger message that that is not the case.
Now, Senator, you've got a well-known reputation for being bipartisan. I picture you in the tradition of Margaret Chase Smith, who is a very, very independent voice in the Senate. And it must be incredibly difficult these days to try and be that voice of bipartisanship down in Washington, D.C., especially when you have individuals like Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. Any chance that you're going to be able to work with him to come up with a bipartisan solution to this immigration problem?
So many issues that we have not dealt with due to the excessive partisanship and due to the fact that Senator Reid will not allow Republicans to offer amendments to important bills. That's what happened on the border bill that we were supposed to consider. And we have a lot of good ideas. The promising part of this is, as I talk to more and more of the centrist Democrats, they are equally frustrated because they're not being allowed to offer up their ideas either. And that is just so contrary to the tradition, the history, the very purpose of the United States Senate, which is supposed to be the world's greatest deliberative body. Well, we can't be the world's greatest deliberative body if we don't have open debate and amendment on important bills. And there is a group of us, a bipartisan group of us, that came out of the work I did last fall to help bring the shutdown to an end. And it's Democrats and Republicans and Angus King, and we're getting together to talk more and more about how we can make the Senate function better. But frankly, it's going to take a rising up of people on both sides of the aisle to say no more. Now, the other hopeful sign is I truly believe that if the Senate changes hands and Republicans gain control, that we will return to the tradition of the Senate being a body where members are able to bring their ideas, their amendments, the views of their constituents to the Senate floor for a healthy and vigorous debate, because that's what democracy is all about.
Talking with Senator Susan Collins. Senator, to switch gears a little bit, the IRS corruption scandal, the targeting of conservative groups, has kind of taken a back seat as we have all these other controversies and scandals that we're dealing with. I know earlier this year you introduced a bill that would provide greater accountability to the tax agency. Where do we stand right now with this investigation? Have you been keeping an eye on where we go from here? Because a lot of people that I've talked with get the sense that Eric Holder's Department of Justice is not going to be investigating this as thoroughly as it should, and that we do need independent counsel.
Well, first let me say that I think I was one of the very first members of Congress to write and to ask for an Inspector General investigation, because I view the use of the IRS for political partisan purposes to target conservative or any other kind of group as being absolutely abhorrent. It was once said that the power to tax is the power to destroy. And there is no doubt from the evidence that I've seen that the IRS did target any group that was applying for a tax-free designation under our tax law that had in its names conservative, Tea Party, certain other buzzwords. And that is just plain wrong. It goes even beyond that. In some cases, the IRS tried to compel these groups to divulge their membership lists. How chilling is that? And I think that this scandal is so serious and actually has not gotten the attention that it deserves from the public, the press, and the Congress. There is an investigation underway in the House Oversight Committee, but it's been stymied by one of the key figures, Lois Lerner, citing her Fifth Amendment rights, and by the ongoing Justice Department investigation. To me, one of the scandalous features of this whole issue is the claim that the IRS lost all of Lois Lerner's emails for the period in question. I just find that extremely hard to believe. Now, maybe it is true, but I cannot imagine a federal agency not backing up its emails so that if one computer crashed, there was no record anywhere in the agency, not to those to whom she sent the emails. That really defies credibility to me. And I do think this is important. That's why last year in the Appropriations Committee and this year again when we take up the bill that funds the IRS, I authored language that said that the IRS could not use taxpayer funds to target any group based on its views or for exercising First Amendment rights. I'll offer that again this year when the bill comes up. And I have another bill that requires the IRS Oversight Board, which already exists, to report to Congress allegations of abuses of taxpayers' rights, whether there was disciplinary action involved, in an attempt to get more sunshine and more accountability into this whole scandal and to prevent it from happening in the future. The IRS does not have a good history in this regard, and I think we really need to be diligent.
Talking with U.S. Senator Susan Collins, Senator Collins, we don't really know yet how high up this scandal goes. Lois Lerner is, I think, the highest ranking official who's been connected with this. Recently, we saw that she has some emails where she's calling conservatives vulgar names, comparing them with terrorists. It bespeaks an attitude in the IRS that is very hostile to, you know, half of Americans, the conservative majority, I think, we have here in the United States. How high do you think this scandal goes? Does it reach the White House? And if people in the White House close to Barack Obama knew about this or had a hand in it, what do we do then?
We don't know yet, and that's why the investigations are so important. There is one very concerning piece of evidence that has come out, and that is that the IG briefed the general counsel of the IRS on his findings very early on some preliminary indications. To me, the logical thing for the IRS chief counsel to have done would have been to go to the chief counsel at the White House and inform him or her of the inspector general's concerns. And we just don't know enough. I know that there are a lot of very hardworking, honest people working at the IRS, but within this unit, there appears to have been a culture of corruption that allowed for the abuse of taxpayers' rights. And that is just chilling. It's appalling. And it should be prosecuted if that is shown to be true.
Well, thank you, Senator Susan Collins, for calling in and giving us an update on the border and an update on the IRS scandal. I really appreciate the work you do for us, and wish you the best of luck with your August recess, as much as you get of it anyways.
Thank you so much, Steve. Good to talk to you, and I enjoy reading all of your reports on the main wire.
Well, thank you very much. That's a real honor coming from you, Senator. I really appreciate that.